Back to Promoted. I'm your host, Felicity Fury, co-founder and CEO of We Aspire. Wanya, Renee, welcome to hosting this podcast with me. Renee Wooten, if you did not know, is a superstar aerospace engineer, speaker, and basically an all-around incredible human. How are you, Renee?
Aw, right back at you, Felicity. I am so well today. Always such a pleasure to sit with another incredible female in engineering, but also entrepreneur and all of the things, incredible mom on top of that. So love sitting down with you and running this pod with you. I'm doing really well today. It's a great day. We've had some interesting weather around, a bit humid, but we're living the dream. So what about you?
Oh, it's been a fab start to the day. I'm ready to get into this conversation. We have a taboo topic. I feel like trigger alert, warning alert, taboo topic coming, which is a bit spicy. It's a bit exciting. We are talking about pay. How do you get a pay rise? How do you know you're getting paid the right amount? And I'm not sure for you growing up, Renee, but for me, money, finances wasn't really something that was ever discussed. You know, it was very taboo to ask someone what they got paid. You know, I certainly even feel like that now. It's not something that I would, you know, ask people unless I really knew them well. And even then, oh, it's still a really awkward conversation. And I remember actually going back to one of my early experiences, my first engineering job. I thought I was getting paid really well. I was actually for a graduate. I thought it was just, I was living my dream. And I got my first pay rise, and it was about 10, it was 6 months into the role, about a 10% pay rise. And I proudly came home and I told my parents all about it. And my dad literally said, I've been working at the newspaper for 20 years and you're on the same salary as me. And I felt really awkward. And he was, you know, really proud of me. And I could tell he was proud, but also there was a bit of, you know, kind of irked him, I think. So it can be a tricky topic to talk about. Renee, is it taboo for you in your family growing up?
Oh, I don't think we ever talked about pay in my family growing up, never. But money is such a tricky topic. And I think money is also this great source of comparison for people's level of success, which I don't think is a great reflection. You know, just starting this conversation has made me think about years ago, maybe 10 years ago, when I first started working at Qantas. I ran into the head of HR at the time, and she was from the UK, and she was talking to me about pay and the fact that, you know, she was on a certain salary in her previous job, and when she came to Qantas, it was a horizontal move, and she did have to reduce the pay a little bit. And she talked about the fact that it's so important to not make decisions based on pay, but also that sometimes to make some moves, you do have to change your pay in order to kind of keep progressing down your passion pathway. So pay is such an interesting, taboo, controversial topic to talk about. So I'm super excited to get into this one with you today. I want to start actually with an experience that I recently had with a really good friend of mine that I grew up with. She, for context, went to university maybe at 25, so a little bit later than usual. She worked and kind of traveled for the first couple of years out of school, went to uni a bit later, and therefore is already kind of behind anyone else that kind of went straight from school into work and started getting paid for employment. And you know, once she finally graduated from uni, started in the workforce, she was mentioning to me that she's literally had to move suburbs and move further away from work because the growth in a certain area that she's living has been so significant in terms of people moving there that she's now kind of being like forced to move away in order to kind of secure low rent to be able to kind of match her salary and her budget. Which is such a, it's a profound impact, right, on an individual, is that they have to move away from work in order to actually be able to afford to live. So that's like one call out immediately where I'm like, holy dooly, like that must be really challenging. Then the next piece, and actually maybe I'll also add to that, some people actually seek out doing that as well to reduce their cost of living. So it's not always a forced situation. It's actually a proactive choice as well. But In this case, it was a forced situation. And then on top of that, she was saying she knows that the market average for her role and her set of skills was far higher than her paid salary. However, her employer has just been through some turbulence. There was a number of people that moved out of the business and a whole new bunch of people that had moved in. So she said to me, I'm not comfortable asking for a pay rise right now because I know how much my boss is going through and she's really stressed. And I was like blown away because, first of all, if you reflect on one of our earlier episodes on keeping business, to me, this is such a business problem. It's not a personal problem, but she's turned, this salary crisis into a personal problem. And it's stopping her asking for a pay rise. And it just blew my mind. What do you think about that, Felicity?
Oh, so tricky. And, I feel for business owners because it can be hard. But that's not your problem. That's the business's problem. I completely agree. And I think one thing that can also come up with pay that's really tricky is collapsing your value with what you're getting paid. And this is something I know I personally have experienced, is my self-worth being tied directly to my pay. From one of my early engineering jobs, I actually got made redundant. And then, so that job that I was just talking about at the beginning, where I was getting this great salary, hello, global financial crisis. And the next role I took was 20 grand less than what I was getting paid. So that was quite tricky. And at the time there was, not many opportunities around. So I did go for something that was a bit lower. And I ended up getting a secondment and then, very quickly got back up to that pay within the organization I was working for. But I think one thing over time, when I left my job to go work in my business, I took a 50% pay cut and was earning, actually, now that I think about it, I haven't thought about this before, it was less than that graduate salary that I was talking about. But I was so passionate about running the business and, that self-worth component can be very real for me sometimes, and I can collapse those two things when it comes to pay. And I often hear people saying things like, I'm not getting paid what I'm worth. So I think, as well as understanding the environment you're working in, also understanding, well, there is a difference between your value and what you get paid, which can be a tricky thing to navigate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think throughout my career as well, I have had several occasions where, knowing your pay versus your colleagues in the same role, it's not disclosed. It can be incredibly challenging to navigate and negotiate your pay when moving into a new role too. So how do you know if you are being paid the right amount? One tool that I actually used, which I read about before I then employed it, was asking your employer when you're going through the contract negotiations, am I being paid in line with my colleague's level of experience? And am I being paid fairly? If you ask that question, then, your potential employer has to answer that. And they have to answer it honestly. So that was actually something that I've started doing now, is when I'm negotiating pay, I ask, am I being paid fairly in comparison with people in the same role? And generally, that served me quite well in terms of trying to make sure that my pay is as fair and in line with the expectations of the role in the market. But I've also had a situation where I have negotiated, and I negotiated quite hard. So I think it's also circumstantial. If you're going for a job that, for instance, you've been headhunted for, then you're in the position of power. So one role that I went for in the past, I didn't apply for it. I got called up and asked to apply. And then, as it turned out, throughout the recruitment process, I figured out that they wanted me in that role. And even though other people had applied, they were very set on me, taking on that job. And the reason I found that out is because I actually turned the job down throughout the recruitment process, and then they pitched me so hard to keep me in the recruitment process. I realized at that moment, okay, I've got a fairly good chance now of not only using that information to my advantage, but now I have a high sense of confidence going through the process. So I'm going to ask the hard questions. Mm-hmm. And what added to that actual recruitment process as well was when they originally asked and called me to take on the job or to apply, they asked me in that call how much I was on at the time. And when I told them, they were like, outrageous. For your level of skills, for the experience that you have, you should be paid far higher than that, Renee. You know, they're really underpaying you in that job. So they kind of use that to leverage me to really think about applying for this job. So quite interestingly then, when I went for, you know, that role that I was being headhunted for, I asked for a wage that I probably wouldn't have been comfortable asking for prior to that, but I used that to my advantage. What do you think about that, Felicity?
Oh, you gotta leverage what you got, I think. It's tricky. I don't think I've ever negotiated pay while in a role. I have moved around a lot. You know, most of my roles have been sort of 2 to 3 years. So that probably makes sense why I haven't negotiated in the role, because I haven't stayed there, you know, for a long period of time. And yeah, I find going in is the easiest time to negotiate. And I've tried all different things. And I have to say, you know, I've now researched it further, and I wish I'd done some more research around pay before kind of winging it going into roles. But yeah, I'd certainly said to people, I expect this salary. And that anchoring, I think, can be quite powerful when you do set that expectation. And you do have to obviously be careful. And it's interesting that your experience was that you actually, you know, should have been getting paid or higher than you could have been. So yeah, I remember asking a mentor, oh, how do I ask for a pay rise? And she just said, just go in and ask for it. Just say the number that you want. And I've had, you know, varying degrees of success over the years. One reason an employer said that I couldn't get the salary that I wanted was because I was just trying to bump it up each time, was that my team members weren't on more than that salary. Another reason, maybe I'm asking too much, I'm just reflecting. Another one was my manager said, I don't get paid that much, so I can't pay you that much, which is okay, well, that's fair and reasonable. So yeah, there's been, you know, varying degrees of success, certainly for me personally asking over the years, but I think it is definitely easier, but I found it easier negotiating going in. And I think having really yep. good justifications for that is the important piece. And yeah, the power dynamic is a really interesting one. Can I share some research with you on this, Renee, that I found super interesting?
Yeah, please do.
So we're putting together a bit of a report. Actually, we've done this report. It's awesome. We looked at over 243 academic papers, 25 case studies, read a number of books, and we really went to town on what's working. This is for gender equity, but I think it applies here in this conversation. And one of the topics that came up was around pay. And, you know, I'd heard recently around the gender pay gap in Australia. WGEA just released the pay gap results last week. So it's absolutely really topical at the moment. And the research found that women negotiate salaries 17% lower than men because they expect more backlash. So they're going into these negotiations thinking that they put it out there, they're going to get pushed back more. So they generally pick lower numbers. Really fascinating to see, unfortunately, that gender biases do play a role in this for women and for men. I know these are generalizations. But if the research also showed that if women go in negotiating really hard on pay in the role, then the biases are that they're less likable because that compared with a male, because we have these stereotypes around how women and men should be. So if a man goes in and negotiates, then that's sort of seen as a positive, where for a female, it can come across as negative, which really irks me. And, you know, I really wish we didn't have those biases, but it was an interesting thing to become aware of, that there were those gender differences. So I think if you are, you know, going into the role, like into negotiating, or if you are in a leadership position and you are bringing in new people, something absolutely to consider when these conversations come up.
Absolutely. The WGEA results that came out in February this year are quite interesting and quite stark, depending on industry and organization type. As it turns out, aviation is quite significant and probably one of the biggest gender pay gap industries, but there's a lot of reasons as to why that is. As you, our listeners may be aware, STEM by nature of the industry has really low female representation, so most men are in those really high paying STEM roles. Which is quite an interesting, you know, outcome and something that's quite challenging to change. But then we do see some consultancies, some big retailers that have significant pay gaps and they don't actually need to have them. So we hope that, you know, by companies moving forward having to actually promote year on year now their gender pay gap, there'll be some harsh kind of action taken around implementing some changes so that we can actually see women paid fairly, so that it's not reliant on women actually having to take control of these conversations. You know, there is an expectation that people are paid fairly and equitably for the skills and the experience that they bring to a role.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, I think, snapshot of Australian workplaces today. And I really did look into the research and thought about it a lot, because I was thinking, is the gender pay gap, does that mean people are getting paid different for the same amount of work? And so I had to go through the data, and this was really surprising to me. I went, oh, okay, it's actually law that men and women get paid equal, and it's been the law for a number of years. But I think the way, I think it can be a bit confusing how it's called the gender pay gap, but I think essentially what it, my overall take on it is that people, it's basically showing, you know, that discrepancy between leadership roles, who, you know, how many people you've got in those leadership roles that are men and women. And, you know, it's funny seeing some of the retailers, like, I think, you know, something like Forever New or those kinds of brands where they had so many women in the company that actually skewed it the opposite way. So I think it just is a really great overarching picture.
Yeah.
Who, you know, where are we at? It's almost like in terms of women in leadership roles or men in leadership roles and what that gender piece looks like. What would be your top tips for negotiating a pay rise or negotiating pay when you're coming into it, Renee? Have you got any kind of go-to strategies? You mentioned asking those questions around, you know, what's fair and what your colleagues are on. Have you got anything else that's worked for you?
Yeah, it's such a tricky one. And I really do think it's heavily circumstantial, actually. You know, if I think about the last two times that I've moved into a role, you know, one of those times is what I've asked the question before signing the contract. You know, am I being paid fairly? Is this pay on par with my colleagues? And then in the instance that I did ask that, I actually got told quite fairly and frankly that, you know, your colleagues actually have more experience than you. So as a result of that, you are paid less than them. But at least I had that conversation and there was that transparency, and I actually agreed in that case with that feedback. In the case of another job, that was the headhunting, so I really was able to use that to my advantage in that situation. But there is such a thing as well to be mindful of around pay, like asking for a salary and being filtered out of the recruitment process because your expectations are too high. And I see that happen quite a bit as well. People come in with really high expectations around salary and they're not willing to negotiate around that, which can tend to happen if you're making a move and you're not typically too invested in actually taking that job. So you can kind of show your cards quite early in a recruitment process if you're asking for too much, by out kind of, you know, just requesting pay that's far significant in comparison to what the role requirements and responsibilities actually are. So that's something to be mindful of when you're having these conversations. I always like to go in and say, I'm being paid this, and I would like to be paid in that same sort of band. However, I would like to be paid fairly in comparison to my colleagues. So what that does is really puts that onus both back on yourself but the employer as well, They have to take some responsibility in making sure that you are paid fairly. You're not just at the bottom of a band. And that's something to note as well. Generally, for any role you're going for, there's a band between a minimum and a maximum. You can be paid in that band. And before you go into any conversation, I would do as much research as possible around what you think that role equates to. And I would always put in a request a little bit higher, because what you'll find is throughout a recruitment process, a talent acquisition specialist will call you. And if your pitch is too high, they'll ask you if you're prepared to come down. So I think it's always better to start from a position of where you have to negotiate down rather than lowballing yourself and then trying to kind of ask for more through a recruitment process. So I would say I would take that approach typically if I'm moving into employment with a new employer or a new role. But if you're in a role and not looking to move on but just looking to get a pay rise, then coming with insight into if your colleagues are willing to share and having a conversation with colleagues to find out how much they're being paid, which some people, are comfortable doing. If you're not comfortable taking that approach, I'd do as much market research as possible and then present some data around why you should be paid more based on your experience, but then also back that up with what you've achieved in your role. So if you're overperforming, that's a really great basis to then also get that support to get a pay rise. What about you, Felicity? What's your approach?
I can tell you something, what not to do first, which was something I did. And I'm so silly now that I think about it, but confession time. I actually gave a range for a role and I said, I like to get paid between this number and this number. And they said, great, we can do both of those. What do you want? And I picked the one in the middle. How silly is that? Why didn't I just go for the top? Like, I could have gotten, yeah. I think it was a range of about 10 grand. And I think at the time I was like, oh, I'll try and be nice. And, and I was talking to the business owner and gosh, so silly. So I would say do not do that, number one tip. I think going in with, I love that you're like setting those expectations, doing your research, finding out, what's typical of that role. If you're going for a few roles, even talking to recruiters around expectations, I think can be a really helpful suggestion, or even peers who might be in similar roles can be helpful to find out, what do you expect? I like asking the question, and I think this can go for things beyond salary as well. If you're saying, say you're like, oh, I want to get paid 200 grand, what would it take to get paid that? And framing in that way, because then you can say, okay, that's that person's expectations of, say, a 200 grand salary. Okay, what am I going to do to get there? Or, okay, I'm missing that piece of experience, or I've got this. And that can be a helpful framing, I think, for yourself and also for the employer, because then they're also talking through what they need and you can assess whether you're meeting those requirements. I think going into it, like I said, having done the research, I think if I'm in a role and I'm wanting to increase my salary, I'd sit down and have that conversation with my manager and say, look, 6 months early. I think often in the past I've expected, if you're going to have a salary conversation, it's you talk about it at promotion time or you talk about it when you want it, rather than actually taking a step back and saying, hey, look, in 6 months' time, I would like to get a pay increase. Here's everything I've done so far, exactly like you said, Renee, talking about all of those ways you've added value, and then saying, in 6 months, I'd like this. What's it going to take for me to get there, or what would you expect to see in that time? And taking stock of what you have achieved, I know something that not everybody does, but I found that to be really, really helpful. So simple things like, I remember when I was working for a university and in a partnerships role, I tracked the number of partners that I'd gained in my first 12 months. So we were actually able to double the number of partners from up to 22. So just taking note of things like that, and it could just be, once a week, once a month, sit down and reflect, what have I accomplished and how could you frame that so that it adds value? So saying, double the number of partners, and we went from mapping out, I think, 8 projects or about 12 projects a year with partners to I did a workshop in 3 days and, oh, sorry, two and a, it was 3 workshops over 1.5 days, and we were able to create 30 project ideas. So going, I create this efficiency, and they're just very basic, simple examples, but actually framing those things and how you add value can be really important and a great way to come into that conversation prepared.
Absolutely. I agree. And just to add to that too, I think get comfortable having this uncomfortable conversation. You know, really do your homework around this, because ultimately, you know, you're going to need to have this conversation if you are an employer for your life, an employee, sorry. If you intend to work for somebody your entire life, no matter what job you move into, you are consistently going to be building experience and skills. Therefore, you're consistently going to be moving up to a period of time, you know, based on what your ambitions are and where you want to go with your employment. But it means that this conversation will continue to occur at least every couple of years. So making sure you equip yourself with the right skills, the right research, the right data, and the confidence to go in and have that conversation is so important to you and your earning capacity for the rest of your life.
Yes, I think you touched on something so important there, Renee, and it is important to have these conversations, I think, early, because it really sets that trajectory for your career. If you're not negotiating well in the beginning, or you haven't had success in that, then it can, you know, as a percentage effect over your career, have a really big impact. And I love what you said there about confidence, and this actually came up with a conversation I had with someone last week, and they came to one of our immersive experience days, and she shared that in the media interview activity that we had, people role play a CEO, and she had to justify it. It was an exorbitant salary. It was like millions of dollars salary this CEO was on. And she had to justify it in this live media interview simulation. And she said, because she'd had that experience and that practice, when she did get headhunted for a role, she could stand her ground. And the feedback when she practiced it in the media interview was that she was the only one that stood her ground and was confident in her answer. So I think also practicing these conversations, whether it's with your best friend who's a safe space, your partner, a colleague, a mentor, that can really help build that confidence. And even having them say all the things you don't want them to say, like, you're not worth it, that's not valuable, I can't believe you're asking for this salary. Actually, when you have those responses that you most fear, then you actually can build up that confidence. And that's been one of my favorite ways to have to practice those difficult conversations.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. So you've heard it here today. How do you have that uncomfortable conversation about what you're paid and really start equipping yourself with the skills, the data, and the support to make sure that you are asking those questions, because this will inevitably be an ongoing conversation for the rest of your life. Thank you, Felicity. As always, such a great conversation to have. You've heard it here today on the Promoted Podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Renee. We'll see you in the next one.